Welcome to Group Talk, four shows, one podcast from the Small Group Network focusing on topics relevant to small group ministries. Whether you're in a church of 100 or 10,000, whether you're a volunteer or staff, we want to support, encourage, and equip you to lead well. So relax, listen, and enjoy Reading Lens with Nick Lindsay.
Hey, Small Group Network, welcome back to another episode of Reading Lens. We are so glad you chose to take time to hang out with us. I am Nick Lindsay, and it's an honor to be the host. If you're with us for the first time, welcome. We're so excited that you've joined us. Here's how Reading Lens works. Each month, I have a guest with us who's also a Small Groups point person to share with you insights from books we are reading and what our takeaways were and how we plan to incorporate them into our lives, leadership, and our small groups. Today, we have our first reoccurring guest on the Reading Lens show, Andrew Camp. Welcome, Andrew.
Thanks. Great to be back with you, Nick.
Yeah. Friend of the pod, I think is what we should, you know, go with. I like that better than reoccurring guest.
Yeah.
You've been on Group Talk a lot. So Andrew Camp is a spiritual director at Mountain Life Church in Park City, Utah. And Andrew and I have been friends for several years. And I actually think our friendship has really grown over quarantine. We've really kind of connected. We have a little group chat going that's been awesome to be able to get updates going on. And it's one of the beautiful things about Small Group Network, finding your people and just being able to keep in touch and having a safety valve to vent to people who understand what you're going through so that you don't have to put that on your staff, which may deal with today's book a little bit.
Yes.
So this is now the fifth book that we've done together. And this is the first time we don't have Carolyn with us. So shout out to Carolyn. We miss you. And she's not here to save us, but I think we can hopefully get by, right?
I think so. It feels wrong not to have her.
It does. It does. And here's the previous four books. If you want to go back and listen to any of those, you can find them here in our channel. But it's we did Daring Greatly by Brené Brown, talking about vulnerability and shame, which is really interesting topic, but super, super important when it comes to groups. One of my favorites, Art of the Gathering by Priya Parker, which was fantastic. There's some really good things in there about how people connect and how your group leaders can help people feel more welcomed. And even your reoccurring guests, how to make sure that they are a part of this process as well. We did Free to Focus, which I know is a personal favorite of yours, right, Andrew? You're a big Michael Hyatt fan.
Yeah, not at all, but he keeps coming back in my life. So maybe God is trying to tell me something, but I'm going to hold off on that one.
I may have been the one that pushed that one through. I'm a big Michael Hyatt fan and really enjoy his habits on productivity, which that one is a fun one to go back to because we did that one literally March of 2020. And so it's funny to go hear about like our hopes and dreams of productivity that got then crushed like literally two weeks later. And then one of the other ones we did was We Need to Talk by Cecily Headley, who is an NPR host. And she was just sharing about how she's led good interviews. And we thought it was really good as to how group leaders might be able to better lead conversations inside there. I don't know if you saw this, Andrew. She has a new book called Speaking of Race, Why Everyone Needs to Talk About Racism, which might also be a really good one to pick up as well. So
yeah, no, I just saw that when you sent me some notes and I'm like, ooh, there's another book to add to my ever-growing list.
Yes. You know what's good about her is because she's an NPR host, that means she's going to read the audiobook. And that's one of those just like, all right, I'm just going to listen to this because I know you are a speaker more than you are an author. And those have been, you know, some of the best audiobooks out there.
Yeah. And I will say when we were reviewing this, We Need to Talk might be a great book that will come into focus as we're talking about challenging up in this.
In
the book we're talking about today about how to have those difficult conversations with your senior leaders. So anyway, just a plug for that one.
Great connection there. Great connection. So Andrew, you lead in Park City, Utah. What do you love about Park City?
It's not the skiing. Surprisingly, people will be ashamed and sad to know I've only been skiing once in my 9 years of being in Park City, but my wife and I love the mountains. We just love being able to be out and enjoy nature. And we have a 4 and a 2-year-old. And so getting them out and starting them hiking and just enjoying being outside, like we're outside a lot, even in the winter, because it's so beautiful here.
Yeah, and so that is awesome. That's got to be great for the health too, to just have that outlet and to be able to get out there. And that's awesome.
Yeah, because even when it's like 32 degrees and sunny here, it's like I can be out in sweatshirt and jeans and go for a nice walk. Especially during COVID, it was a lifesaver.
And what do you love about your church?
I think just the people. You know, I know that sounds cliche, but you know, it's the people we get to lead, the people we've developed relationships after being here for so many years and have the ability to influence, leaving my legacy here, knowing that I've made a difference.
Your church, your Park City is you have people who come in for seasons, right?
Yeah, we have seasonal people. Yeah. We have a little of everything.
Peaks in the winter, peaks in the summer.
It's tough to say because we have some people who leave during the winter because, you know, they want to be warmer. So they'll go down to Phoenix, you know, and then come back for the summer. And then we have some people who are here for the winter because they love skiing and who will leave for the summer.
Yeah.
And so I have never yet to determine peaks and valleys.
That's interesting. So then how does that, so now I'm curious, how does that then work out with groups? Do they like let you know when they're back or like?
Most of our groups are people who are here long-term. The struggle I have yet to solve, I feel like there needs to be a small group network page for just resort town people, of how do you connect seasonal people? You know, and I think COVID has helped a little with Zoom and the, you know, ubiquity of Zoom, but like it's becoming harder now because people are like, I'm done with Zoom. I don't want to do both. And so I think that's the challenge of like, okay, it's those people, hey, I'm here for 3 months. Help me get connected. And I'm like,
yeah,
well, three months. Like what do you do with person that person?
Well, let's use this podcast then. So if you are in a resort town, maybe you're in Florida or you're in some, I'm trying to think where the Arizona, I think is another one. Yeah. You can email me nick@smallgroupnetwork.com and I'll help you connect you to Andrew. That might be a nice little huddle that could go of just, hey, we have this in common. Here are the things that are working. Here's the challenges we have. Here's what we've tried. That's one of the nice things about small group network is finding your people. And there's some nice niches that get in there. So it's interesting. I have a little niche as well with, I connect often with Kirsten Telzero, who is in DC. So we're both doing city environments and dealing with transition a lot. And so it's been nice to kind of have somebody else to bounce ideas off of and things like that. So today we're here to talk about the book, How to Lead When You're Not in Charge by Clay Scroggins. Andrew, what drew you to today's book, How to Lead When You're Not in Charge?
I think it's just that idea that, you know, as a small group point person, we are tasked with getting the masses connected, which influences not only Sunday morning, it influences youth, it influences kids. And yet we don't have the quote unquote authority church-wide to do everything. And so how do we lead and change and have influence in that aspect when we're tasked with with something that is so big that we can't remain siloed?
This is one of those books that like, I feel like as soon as you pick this up and you read it, you instantly go, oh, I really wish I had this like so many years ago, right?
Yeah.
Like, did you get that feeling at all when you read it just being like, well, this would have been helpful in the past?
Yeah. I read it because I just celebrated 5 years of being on staff. And so like, I was like, I wish I'd read this book 5 years ago. Where was this book when I needed it? Nobody told me about this book. So if you're just starting out and you're looking for that book, please pick this book up and read it. I think it will spare you the messy mess that I'm sure Nick and I have both felt. Doing things badly instead of, you know, with more grace and humility.
Yeah. I felt like going through this book, there's a lot of the principles in it that I went, yep, learned that one the hard way.
Yeah.
Like stepped in that as well. So, All right, Andrew, when we say, you know, not being in charge, what do we mean by that? Clearly we're in charge of some things, right?
Yeah. And so I think Clay draws that great distinction and even Andy points it out in the foreword of just the fact that we usually equate leadership with having that final authority, you know, being the CEO or the senior pastor, or the corner office, however you want to look at it. But really leadership is really using our influence to influence others, to challenge the status quo, to make the changes that need to be made. And so how do we do that when we're not that top guy, you know? And so I think that's just reframing the leadership question, because it feels like a lot of the leadership books sometimes focus too much on that senior leadership. And so how do we use how do we understand leadership and influence when you're middle manager, which, you know, it feels sometimes a lot of small group point people are.
Yep. And it's interesting because some of you may work in like a campus kind of environment, because it's interesting, you know, when I was reading through this, like Clay's talking about not being in charge, but yet he's a campus pastor. And I was thinking through like, there's so many people who's like, clearly you're in charge. Like you're a campus pastor. Like I report to a campus pastor, like that kind of context. And, but then you recognize like Clay Scroggins works for North Point and his lead pastor is Andy Stanley. So, you know, you can clearly see the challenge of not being in charge and having someone who is clearly going to be, you know, making the decisions for the church. But I thought there were some really good examples in this book too, of like, we wanted to experiment with these things on our campus and we were shut down because of the context of the whole and like it not being ready for the entire environment. And I thought that might be really relatable to those who are in, you know, the multi-site kind of context as well. So Angie, what are some of the things that frustrate you about not being in charge?
I think it's not having, being able to make small groups the primary focus of everything we do. You know, it's like we have a vision for what we think small groups should be in the church. And, you know, and if my senior pastor only listened to me, which, you know, I have all the details, I have the whole picture, which I don't, which Clay reminded me of in this book, you know, things would be a lot easier. You know, so I think it's that aspect of like feeling that, that frustration, that pull, that if only I had more authority, I could actually do more. Which he just debunks in great, with great grace and humility.
Yeah, I would say for me, it's what frustrates me about not being in charge is I have this control idol. Like, I know it's there. Like, I want to be in control. And as soon as that gets removed, like, that really frustrates me. But I think part of the control thing too, it's also this similar to claustrophobia in that, like, I'm constantly like looking for my exits. And so I think part of the other things of like being in control is like, okay, well, if I don't like how it's going, then I can direct it somewhere else. And when you're being told what to do, it's much more challenging for me. So one of the things that's like hardest for me, anytime I'm voluntold to do something, that's like, man, my heart has sometimes the hardest time doing those tasks, just being like, I didn't select to do this. Like, I don't want to be up on this stage peeling off tape, like those kind of things. So that was a hurt from a long time ago that those on my staff will probably be laughing at hearing that one. But, you know, so you alluded to this a little bit about, you know, so he starts this book talking about the myth of authority and leadership and how they go hand in hand. Have you come across that? Like, was there a moment in your, I realize you've been in for 5 years, but has been a moment that you've noticed that myth not being true?
Yeah, I think it's when I realized that my senior pastor started using the tagline for our small groups, we call them life groups, where he started using it almost without thinking, where, you know, we say at Mountain Life Church, life groups are the foundational element of spiritual growth, caregiving, and kingdom impact. Very similar to probably a lot of your churches out there. And so when he started saying that without really thinking about it, I realized I had influenced something in him to realize the importance of small groups. And so you're just like, okay, like it's working. It's a lot slower than I had hoped, but maybe he's catching on, or when he's using small group illustrations and sermons more and talking about his small group or the men's group he leads, like you're like, okay, is something clicking that we can continue to capitalize on?
Yeah, cool. Okay, so as you're reading this book, you know, this book's a super easy read, highly encourage you to pick this up. I was sharing with Andrew beforehand, I really think this is a great book for someone just out of college. So rather than picking up all the places you'll go, give them this book instead. This is a really good one when you're getting started. But he also just follows kind of like a simple outline. So as you're reading through it, you can just sort of tell what's going on. But, you know, really one of the things he does is he talks about four behaviors that'll help you to lead when you're not in charge. And those four behaviors are lead yourself, choose positivity, think critically, and reject passivity. So we're gonna spend a little time in each of those as we go through today, and then we're gonna wrap up with talking about how we can challenge up inside of our environments, which is, you know, how this book wraps up as well. He spends the first part of this book, like Andrew was talking about that relationship between leadership and authority, and then spends the rest of it kind of giving you, this book gives you a lot of practical how-tos, which is really impressive on a book like this. Usually on a book like this, you're going to get a lot of like theory and thoughts and stuff, but he really makes it kind of practical. So let's start with lead yourself. Why is it important to lead yourself first?
There's that old saying, you can only lead somebody as far as you've gone yourself. And so as we think about what it means to lead others and lead and influence others, if we're not taking the time to grow spiritually, grow relationally, grow intellectually, you know, the total package, we're not going to be able to influence others to a greater degree. And so really, we got to take ownership of who we are. We're adults. We're grown men and women. Like, you're responsible for who you become. Obviously, the Spirit plays a role in that, you know, but are you setting yourself up to be worked upon by the Holy Spirit?
Yeah. Yeah, it's I think this is so important. It's something that, like, I have really taken to heart. It's interesting. I was never really a huge student in school. Like, I was always like, I wanted to be doing, I wanted to, like, I learned more hands-on, those kind of things. And when I got out of college is like when I became a reader. And I wonder how much of that comes back to that control idol I was talking about, right? All right, right, now I'm in control of the syllabus. I can choose how I'm going to grow. And I think that's a big part of this, right? So it's just like, okay, I'm looking to become this level. What are the things I need to know? What are the things that I need to learn? And then I just love too, like, I think this is why this podcast is great for me. I love learning from all sorts of different resources and seeing, because I just really believe that all truth is God's truth. And so it's been great getting to pull from different things and think about how those things have evolved. But I think leading yourself, like you talked about, leading yourself is so important, because if you haven't been there, then how are you expecting to lead others where you haven't been before?
Yeah. So. And I think sometimes, you know, when we start off in ministry, we have this fantasy that our senior leaders will really shepherd and mentor and guide us. And sometimes that does happen, but sometimes it doesn't, you know? And so which he talks about reject passivity. How do you make sure you take ownership of who you are in all leadership capacities and spiritual capacities? And so I think that's that delicate balance of like, we want to be mentored. We want to be pastored as well, but sometimes that doesn't happen. And so how do we make sure we don't settle and become complacent or bitter, but rather continue to lean into those new growth areas?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think leading yourself also then causes for a lot of self-reflection as well. And I think a lot of this book too talks about like kind of understanding your own flaws and kind of working on those problems and things like that. And, you know, this is a quote from the book. It says, how we see ourselves affects our ability to follow others, our ability to lead others, our ability to find the future God has for us. And until you know who you are, you can't do what God has called you to do. He shapes and molds our character by speaking into our lives and our identities. He has done that with me, and I believe he wants to do the same for you. So, you know, just really talking about how this is where God's going to do a lot of the work, is when you're working on leading yourself and giving God the opportunity to be a part of that, I think is a huge part of leading yourself.
Mm-hmm. So, and that's what he talks about in sort of those three principles for self-leadership. The second one was sort of monitoring your heart and behavior, especially those dark corners. You know, because when you're learning to lead up or to have influence without having the quote unquote authority, it's those dark corners that can quickly, that, you know, I think Satan will use to drive a wedge between you and your senior leadership. And so how do you really allow God to do that work in your identity in those quiet times and those spaces of self-reflection where, you know, you can really begin to see who you are and who you're becoming?
Yeah. And one of the other things he talks about too, and the other principles there is make a plan. So just knowing where you currently are, having a vision of where you want to go, and develop discipline and accountability to do what it takes to stay on track. This has been super beneficial for us. I love, like, our church gives us space. We're kind of required to do our own life plans at Hoboken Grace. And when you get that assignment at first, you're like, oh, come on, like this is like this on top of everything else. But they've given us a day away every year to go work on those. And that has just been super beneficial to think through, like, okay, what are the things that, like, where am I currently? And then where do I want to go? Like, the book I recommend if you're looking for a good one on life plan is Living Forward by Michael Hyatt and Daniel Harkavy.
But I think you bring up a great point of that make a plan, you know, especially as we're coming out of a year of real upheaval and disorientation. I think we all need that space to really discern and refocus or reconnect with God. And, you know, my wife, Claire, has encouraged me to get away for a 48-hour retreat, and I just need to put it on the calendar and go. But I think all of us as leaders in the church in the past year, we need that space during, especially right now, to really rethink and reflect on what this past year has meant to us. And so I think as you seek to lead yourself, think about that. You know, I know it's not always easy. It may not be possible, but, you know, you need that space away.
Yeah. The things that I've always found too, it's interesting. You said your wife gave you permission. Like, I feel like for me personally, like, my wife wants to see me go do these things too,
right?
Because they know it's going to end up being better for the whole household. Because, like, if I have a clear plan, I know how I'm going to, like, leading my family is going to be a part of that. And so, like, if anything, as a leader, stop improvising and start, you know, having a plan for what you'd like to do. So.
Yeah.
Hey, Small Group Network family, Jason Banzoff here, Group Talk producer, and I am interrupting this episode of Reading Lens to let you know about some great channels we have for social media. The Small Group Network is all over your favorite social media channels. Do you prefer Instagram over Facebook, or maybe even Twitter over Instagram? We have so many options for you. Also on Facebook, we have a group with over 5,000 people like yourself who want to learn from one another. Hop onto your favorite channel, type in Small Group Network, and subscribe, like, follow, or join today. Now back to Reading Lens with Nick and Andrew.
Well, let's move into Choose Positivity. What would you say is one of the things that jumped out to you for Choose Positivity?
He talked about having the panoptic view, seeing the bigger picture. And sometimes as middle management or, you know, not the senior leadership, we don't have the full view. And it's easy to start thinking, I have the full picture. And so if, you know, why doesn't my senior pastor, my bosses see it this way as well? And so seeing that we may not have the full picture and understand how everything is fitting together can be really helpful because, it's that those dark recesses of the heart. So yeah, that was the bigger one.
I think for me, this one's super helpful because what's interesting is he talks about, he sets everyone up at the beginning. He's like, he asks them blatantly, like, what is the opposite of positivity? And naturally everyone thinks negativity. And he actually talks about how he doesn't think it's actually negativity. He thinks it's being a realist. Mm-hmm. And so for a lot of us, I think this really speaks to me. If you get to know me often, you'll definitely get to hear my opinions. But, I feel like I can be critical. And this is something we're going to cover a little bit later. But he's really challenging us to have kind of that positive attitude and look for the best in situations. I think it's really easy for us, especially after we've been in, you know, these church environments for a long time, for that to continue to grow. And I think one of the things that may be not helpful as well is how much exposure we have to other churches right now.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes we look at that and we hear the best of what's going on. I can even admit, like, I'm probably part of the problem here on this podcast. Like, I try to be honest with you guys as much as possible, but obviously you're going to hear some of the best things that are working here at Hoboken Grace and at Mountain Life Church. But, you know, that grass is always greener kind of thing can cause us to be like, well, if I just had this resource like that church has, or if I just had this, and it's just like learning to be, you know, satisfied with what you have, I think it is super important inside of that.
So. Piggybacking off of that, Nick, he has a great quote, but he says, don't let the frustration you feel over what you don't have keep you from doing what you can do. And I think that's just a great quote to think through of like, okay, it is easy to compare. We love the small group network, but you know, again, like you said, you can hear about what's mm-hmm. working and you realize, oh, well, I can't do that. I can't do that. I can't do that. I don't have that. I don't have that. But you can do something. And so what is that thing you can do?
Yeah. And later on that says seeing what you do will allow you to overcome what you don't. Like, I think that's one of the things too, is like, okay, well, so what is in my control? What can I do? And I think that's a great place to start. And I think one of the really encouraging things at the end of this chapter two quote here, it says, if you're creating something great, your time will come. And if your time hasn't come yet, keep working to create something great. Mm. I think that's just I've seen that be true as well, where it's just like you have a good idea and being able to continue to work on it. He gives some really good examples in there too of them thinking through some strategies that you know, they observed another church doing something. It was even their partner churches they observed was doing something and they really wanted to bring it into their own church. And, you know, they had tried several different methods before they ended up stumbling on the one that works for them. And part of that was kind of polishing off what is the why of what they're doing with that. But at the same time, like not allowing, you know, what they hope for get in the way of what they're currently doing was really good.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. So let's move on to the next one. Thinking critically. Inside thinking critically, he has four subtle shifts that he asks us to make that'll help us to think critically in a better light. And these four subtle shifts is stop thinking as an employee and start thinking like an owner. So in other words, you know, you are currently an employee. What would it look like if you look at the situation as an owner, as someone who owns this? Stop stacking meetings and start scheduling meetings. Stop being critical and start thinking critically, and stop giving a grade and start lending a hand. Andrew, was there one that jumped out to you when you came through this section?
I think thinking like an owner can really help. Like, I even noticed it after I read this book of like, you know, how often do we see a piece of trash on church property and we just walk right yeah. past it versus picking it up? Or, you know, I think right after this, you know, daylight saving time ended. So just walking around the church, making sure all the clocks are changed. Like, you know, it's stupid little things like that, but it's also that thing of like, okay, like, what do I notice? What do I see? You know? And I think that can just be a helpful attitude to have during this season.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really easy to fall into that trap of, well, someone else has to own that. And if I keep doing it, then they're not going to own it kind of thing. And I think I think what you model will be a better reflection than, you know, you being like, hey, this is not a great first impression for them to see trash as soon as they come in kind of thing. So yeah, I think that one's really good. One other thing I'll add to that on start thinking like an owner, I think it was New Spring Church was the first one I heard of this, but they don't refer to their members as members. They refer to them as owners because they want every, what is it? Members have rights, but owners have responsibility. And I just love that, like that short little phrase, members have rights, owners have responsibility. I think that's even a good one for your small group leaders to bring into their own groups. Like, I don't want you guys to just be members of this group. I want you guys to be owners. I want you guys to make it look and feel how you want your group to look like. I think it's really important for them in a small group context of how this can go a little bit further, because I think they also bring more creative ideas. Like, I've lived in apartments all my life, and therefore I can never hang things permanently on walls. And so, as silly as it sounds, one of the things I can't wait for until I can be an owner is to put holes in walls and hang things to studs. But what does that look like inside your groups? What are the things where you could make a permanent impact inside of that? So I think that's a great way to look through that. He goes into this a little bit deeper when it gets into challenging up, but the stop being critical and start thinking critically is really important, because I can really fall into that cynical side, but I also have the ability, if I put in my energy into it, to be that problem solver and to not just come with a problem, but to come with a solution is really important. And I love the way he puts this at the end of that thing where he says, when I point out something wrong with what you're doing, because I think I see it a better way for you, I'm thinking critically to serve you, and sort of thinking it from that. So it's really interesting, since I've read this book and I've had to give feedback, I've really kind of adapted and changed how I've been communicating those things to be like, listen, I'm on your side. Like, here's something I think that would really help you as inside your area. So
yeah, and I think what you're talking about, I don't know if he mentions it, but it was a note I wrote down, is what is your motive in saying what you say? You know, why are you saying it versus just saying it, you know? And it's that, okay, how can I phrase what I'm going to say so that it communicates that I'm on your side? I want you to succeed versus just bashing something.
Yeah, it says here, you know, every time I'm talking about critical thinking with leaders, I ask this question, what is the key difference between someone who's critical and someone who's a critical thinker? After a few moments, someone shouts out my favorite answer, motive, which is...
Yeah.
All right, so let's move on to the next section. The next section is reject passivity. And I think this one, man, this one has been really personal to me. This is the one where I think COVID has wiped out a bunch of my energy, which has then resulted in really kind of being passive inside my role of like, well, I could pick up more, but you know what? Like, I'm just going to do what I'm expected to do, and I'll just, you know, stay here and stay neutral and try to survive. And that may be one strategy, but I feel like that's not a strategy that's going to help me move up or, you know, grow me as an individual. But Andrew, how easy is it for you to drift into passivity? Are there certain situations that cause passivity in you?
Oh, it's too easy. Mm-hmm. And I think COVID, like you said, Nick, like that's a great point of how much COVID has allowed passivity to get into my soul, especially when it comes to small groups. Because like you said, you know, more responsibilities may have come your way during the season, which is definitely my case. And so it's too easy to just say, well, I have to do this. I have to do this. You know, we're not really interested in small groups, and I'm all alone in my small group ministry. Therefore, nobody cares, you know? And so you just begin to believe the lies that are like, there's nothing for me to do, so therefore I'm not going to do anything, which is just a bad place to be. It's like, this book just points out again and again, if nothing else, like, watch your soul.
Yeah.
Like, when you're not in charge, your soul is at great risk, you know? And there are great risks when you are in senior leadership, but like that passivity and just not caring quickly then snowballs into more dangerous attitudes if I'm not careful. And so I think it's so convicting. Yeah. Like, if we take time to really think about it.
That was so good. If you're listening to this and you have the ability, I would tell you to rewind to make sure you just caught what he shared. I think that's so important. I think one other thing I would add on there too is what you made me think of too is how passivity also causes us to then lower our standards, I think, as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I see that group is kind of sliding, but you know what? Like, I don't have the energy. Like, they're fine. You know, we'll let that go. And I think that you just end up in bigger messes by, you know, being in that passivity. So he does give us a few ways out of that passivity. So he gives us a little anagram that kind of helps us reject passivity here, and it's CPR. So it's choosing, planning, and responding. So for choosing, what he's suggesting here is don't just wait for someone to give you marching orders. Go ahead and pick up a problem and make it great. Even if your solution isn't perfect, you've done something in the area where nothing was being done, and you've taken a step to reject passivity in yourself. I think that one's a phenomenal one. He gives another example in there of really going after those problems that have been sitting on the shelf for a while is another good one to kind of pick up in kind of down periods.
Or he also, what I love too, is the story he told of like, when, if your church has interns or if you've ever been an intern, there's always that closet you are told to clean when you first start, you know. Kids ministry has that closet. Youth ministry has that closet. Yeah. You know, we have a closet. I got to figure out what the closet is, but there's always a closet to clean. And sometimes it's just that small little thing, whether it's organizing curriculum or, you know, cleaning up some database issues. Like, it is such minuscule work, but it gets you off your butt, like, you know, to put it a little crudely. Yep. And so I think I love that story of what is the closet that you
I
need
love
to-
that butt is crudely.
I don't know our audience, you know, I got to respect it. I was a former chef, so therefore my vocabulary tolerance is sometimes not always kosher.
My vocabulary is not great because I worked too long on Wall Street and it's not good. It took me several years to unwind some of that, but having children speeds up that process.
Yes.
When they start repeating. So cool. I think one of the things, just a personal example inside choosing of this recently, just to give you kind of an example here, you know, we have staff meetings on Mondays and or all staff on Mondays, and we have a different rotation and stuff. And one of ours once a month is a book that we all read together. And, you know, our lead pastor was doing all of those all staffs for us. And he got to a point where just like it just kept falling off. Right. So we'd come up and be like, like we're going to push this month book to another month, or weren't reading the whole thing kind of things. But, you know, he had the list of books already done, and just taking that off his plate, like finding things to take off of your senior's plate or whoever's, you know, above you is a really good thing to kind of look for. Especially if it's something that you're passionate about. So for me, it was like, I really enjoyed the conversations that we were having about these books. And I'll admit, like, sometimes there's some months where I feel like, man, I've bitten off more than I can chew, especially with this podcast, right? So that means I'm leading like two books a month, like trying to go through it. But like my skill set lines up for that. Like I already am reading, right? And then I have gotten really good at writing questions because of doing the discussion questions every single Sunday, right? So it makes it really simple to come out of those books and be like, all right, here's the things we get to talk about. And so I think that's one of the things where, like, think of those things of, all right, what could you take off someone else's plate? What are the things that would really help them? And the challenging too, he talks about, you know, picking the things that they're passionate about as well. So, so choosing a CP is planning. So don't just sit on a problem, but have a plan for it, and doing so, you're exerting influence. I think that was a really good one. That was one I definitely learned the hard way several years ago, because I'm really good at identifying problems. Like it's, I can't remember what it is. It's the reason I'm also not allowed to be in brainstorming sessions anymore. So they have like series planning meetings, and I used to be a part of them, and I'd just be like, no, that idea won't work because of X, Y, and Z. And it's just like this is not helpful in brainstorming. Like, we've got to have the freedom to be able to dream and to do these things. So like that's, so I'm now brought in afterwards, and it's like, okay, we need to make this happen. Like, what are the problems you foresee? Like, kind of thing. So
see, my problem happens on the earlier end, Nick, of like, I like to ask the questions, the wonder, you know, hey, what about this? But I have harder time coming up with a solution sometimes, you know, like I begin to just think, and I want to process with others about that. But, and so that's where I found his thing tricky, where, you know, never present your boss with only a problem, but also with a solution. Like, I don't know, I see something. And so that's where it's that delicate balance. Like, I see something that's not working. What are the possibilities? And yet that doesn't always work, which we'll talk about with challenging up. But so I don't know, there was that tricky balance of like, okay, how do we allow the wonder to happen where there may not be a clear solution yet because it's too complex of an issue. So I don't know, there's that tricky, that delicate line that I think
we
have to wrestle
with. It's interesting where like you need a team that you're working with, right? You probably have it on your staff, because you probably have someone on your staff or someone in your church who like is able to help you. Like, so that's where I would say like my strengths in strategy and planning, and like, you know, our friend Tommy is the same way, right? He's this dreamer, but he also like figures out the way to make these elaborate plans. And so to your point, like then my weakness is like not asking those big questions, you know, and thinking through those things. So very, very interesting. So let's keep going. So R is responding. So just don't just pick a project you want to tackle, respond to what your boss cares about. So that's what I just talked about in choosing. I realize I picked that up a little too soon. And then let's wrap this up with challenging up. So what did you learn in our challenging up section?
I think there's two big things that really maybe, you know, like we're were key learning points is he asked the question, do you love your boss? So do I love my boss? And do I think the best of him when I'm challenging up? And that question, it, like, you know, of, you know, it's like you could easily say, of course, but then you got to dig deeper in those deep recesses. But do I love my boss? And then realizing that, then when I challenge up, my senior pastor has been here 25 plus years. He's the only senior pastor our church has had, which is a testimony to his faithfulness. But he has put so much of himself in the church so that when I challenge or when I seek to change things, it can sometimes come across as an indictment of him. And so how do I do that? How do I challenge up without raising defensiveness? Was that key question that I'm still wrestling with because I'm not good at it. Because I'll come out and say something bluntly like, well, you know, 50s and 60 year olds, I don't care about. We need to worry about the 40s and, you know, the young families. And he hears that and, you know, raises defenses, which then raises defenses in me, which only doesn't actually lead to a productive conversation. And so how do I do the hard work of seeing what I need to see and being able to challenge it without challenging him, which is that's a weird balance. I don't think there's an easy way to do it.
There's a quote here when you were talking about loving your boss. It says, you can't lead someone well if you don't love them. Loving someone and leading them are a package deal. It's just so good. He had another thing in here too. Loving your boss means genuinely wanting what's best for them. And if you're trying to do what's in their best interest, which I think is, you know, challenging, right? Because sometimes you're like, oh man, like he makes my life difficult. But like, I think sometimes we underestimate the kind of pressures that they can be under. And, you know, we were sharing beforehand, I think, I feel like they only share like 1/8 of the emails that they probably get of just we have to remember how many people are being critical to them. Like, because it almost goes back to that ownership mindset, right? There's a lot of people inside the church who act like they own the church, right? And so they're gonna let the senior pastor know the changes that need to be made. So, I know for me, what stood out too, what was really good. And I learned this, say like a year or two ago, I was really bad about this in the past, but it's bringing up disagreements and challenging during a low emotional times. So in other words, like being really particular when you address issues and just really learning to have patience. I think, you know, I'm naturally someone who just can really boil up and get like frustrated really quickly, and trying to put as much space into that to where I can like come back off my like emotional mountain and trying to find those things. So it's interesting, like, you know, we're recording this the week after Easter, right? And, you know, this would be a really bad time to bring up, all right, hey, here's the changes that we could have made on Easter, or those kind of things. Like, you know, it was just really high emotional, you know, doing several services and very tired, and add in, you know, everything that goes with COVID right now. It's like probably a bad time to bring this up. But if I wait a week or two, and, you know, I think we're going to have better conversations, and I think they're going to be able to hear it better, I think is a big part too.
But then you also need that, and this is where I'm going to plug the small group network huddles, is you need that space where you can still vent, you know, with other people, with other friends and colleagues of like, hey, this is what I'm feeling. Like, help me come off the ledge, you know, like, and so we need brothers and sisters in Christ that can hold us in that space of emotion too, where you know, because I know if I try to deal with my emotions by myself, it's not good. But if I can have a space where I can talk to somebody, I can build that separation a little quicker. Yeah.
And I would say too, maybe you're hearing that and you're like, well, I don't want to be a part of a huddle because I don't want to have to hear other people venting. I would say it's like the healthy side of venting, where it's the release of pressure.
Right.
And it's more focused on like, here's the challenges I'm facing. Like, man, I have asked my senior pastor so many times to champion this, and it's just going nowhere. And then to be able to hear other stories of like, well, here's some approaches I've had in the past, or those kind of things. I think that's where I think huddles can be really great environment. So,
but then it helps you. What he talks about is when you challenge up, you need to be super clear on your why. And so again, you need that place to process of like, how do I clarify the why? Because he mentions if your why is fuzzy in your mind, it's only going to be fuzzier with your senior pastor. And so if I need to be clear on the why before I challenge up, so that he can get a clear grasp of it as well.
And I find so many times if this is interesting. This loops back around too. I find so many times taking that time to figure out the why is so important, because so much of my motives can be wrapped up in that. So sometimes the reason I want something to be done is it's going to make my life easier. It's going to make my numbers better, those kind of things that like, oh, wait, so you just really want this so that you look better, right? As opposed to like, do I want this church to look better? Do I want the kingdom to win here? So Cool. Let's ask with one last question related to this book. How comfortable are you with the idea of challenging people who lead you?
Sometimes I'm probably too comfortable, you know, and so I get on that critical aspect too quickly, you know, because I can frame it. And I think it's true within my own heart of like, I care deeply about the church and I want the church to flourish. And I want new people to be reached in a way that is faithful to the gospel, but also meets where they're at. And so it's easy to be critical. And so that's where it's like, I can challenge it. I don't know. And I need to do a better job of figuring out how to say it to engage in a fruitful conversation versus defensive conversation. Yeah. And that's been like, that's where I, like, for me, the greatest takeaway from this book is like, okay, how do I have those conversations that are more fruitful and helpful, not only for me, but for my senior pastor and for anybody that whether I oversee them or whether they're equals,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And not that this book really needs more points added to it. You have to learn to allow smoke to rise up, because when smoke goes down, it kills, right? So in other words, like if you're complaining to the people below you about what's going on above you, like you are hurting your own authority, you're undermining theirs. And I mean, Clay does talk a lot about how like you have to view this, their authority being from God, which I think is really good. But there is something in there about when you undermine what your authority is saying to those that are either reporting to you or even those that are at the same level, I don't think it's actually helping the situation. And I learned this from Extreme Ownership, which is another book that we did, I think it was the third episode, is that take the time to, when you're unsure of the orders that you receive, take the time to go hear the why from them and do so in a positive manner with optimism. And to tie in another book, so Extreme Ownership tells you to, you know, clarify with your orders, right? The book Never Split the Difference will teach you how to ask those questions that will allow them to be able to answer it in a non-defensive way. So often you can go into it and try to explain like, hey, can you tell me why we're doing this? Which then causes them to be on the difference as opposed to saying, hey, how do you see this initiative affecting X, Y, and Z, right? As a way for them to do that. So cool. Great book. Make sure you pick this up. Let's move on to the lightning round. So Andrew, what's another, I know you're a huge reader. What's another book that you've read recently that's had an impact on your leadership?
It's one that probably won't be well known to our audience, which I'll pick, which is why I'm going to pick it. It's called Leadership, God's Agency in Disruptions. It's by Branson and Roxburgh. But they talk a lot, they're trying to develop a theology of leadership and then using key points of leadership outside the church and discerning how does that apply to what we know about leadership from scripture. And so they talk about Nehemiah, they talk about Luke, they talk about Acts, they talk about Ephesians, and just building a theology of leadership and really discerning what is God up to and how do we bring people into that midst, which I think has been a great question for me to think through during this season and coming out of this past year of, okay, where is God working and what shifts do we need to make in light
excellent.
Of that?
And what's one book you're looking forward to or you might be currently in?
I'm currently in is Eugene Peterson's new biography by Wynne Collier. I don't know how to pronounce his last name, but it's Fire in My Bones. I'm listening to it as I drive to and from work. The narration is beautiful, so which helps, you know, when you're listening to a good audiobook. But I love Eugene. Eugene has shaped my pastoral ministry and theology in profound ways. And so it is a profound book in which I think I need to buy the book too, because there are great sections where I'm like, I want to remember that, like, you know, Wynne had full access to Eugene's library, to family, to friends, and to even his journals. And so, you know, you get an intimate picture of this man who really gives us a model of leadership that is countercultural.
Yeah, and if you don't know who Eugene Peterson is, highly recommend the book, A Long Obedience in the Same Direction, which is just phenomenal. And also a great book in that, like, you can read it a chapter at a time and you'll be good. Yeah. Andrew, this was great. You know, will you come back again?
Obviously, yes. Anytime. I'm a reader. And so I love talking about books that I'm reading, because I think it just distills the learning down into key takeaways for me to remember.
Well, thanks, Andrew. Well, I'm Nick Lindsay, and I want to thank you for listening with us. Thanks, Andrew, for sharing your experiences. And I hope you enjoyed today's podcast. Reading Lens will be back next month with Nick Shanlaw from Third Christian Church in Grand Island, Nebraska. We'll be reading our first Patrick Lencioni book on the show, Silos, Politics, and Turf Wars. yours. And you might have just heard I just said first Patrick Lencioni book, because I am sure there are going to be several Patrick Lencioni books that we read. He's one of those guys that just has a huge impact on me personally, and I know others are a huge fan of. Andrew, do you have any Lencioni books that you've really enjoyed?
I read The Advantage this past year and loved it, of how organizational health trumps everything else. Mm-hmm. Phenomenal.
Yeah, we're really big on our church too, of Ideal Team Player is another one that's just like had a huge impact. So I'm really interested. I haven't actually read this one yet, but I was talking with Nick and Nick said this was a really great one. So this is going to be an episode that you don't want to miss. So come back next week for Inside Saddleback. Thanks for joining us. Remember, leaders are readers. Take care, everyone.
Thank you for listening to Group Talk. We invite you to subscribe to our podcast through iTunes and get new episodes downloaded automatically. Also, if you enjoy this program, please take a few minutes to give us a positive rating on iTunes so that other Small Group Point people can find us more easily. We encourage you to visit our website, smallgroupnetwork.com, to access our library of free resources, connect to a huddle with other small group ministry leaders in your area, read our blog articles, or join us on our Facebook group. Don't forget to use the hashtag SGNet when engaging with your social media channels. Thank you for your support.